compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for listening to the program. And the number to dial to be on the program is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Plenty to talk about. I'd love to hear what's on your mind today. 888-914-9149. We'll get to some of those items in a moment. First, though, let's get to somebody who's been holding for a while. Trisha in Maple Lake, Minnesota, where I just was a few minutes, well, not a few minutes ago, a couple days ago. Welcome, Trisha.
Hi, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
My brother has a teenage daughter and son, and his daughter is a senior in high school, and she is, they've had a great relationship except for this past summer, and she started acting out and getting really disrespectful and kind of mouthy with him, and he just wasn't going to put up with it, and he just finally said to her, because she kept there, he's divorced, and he kept, you know, trying to get her to just be respectful. And he's had some issues with his son too, but he's a strong father. And it's just been really sad that they got into a series of disagreements. And he said, look, if you can't live by my rules here, then live with your mother. Mm-hmm. But you can't live here if you're not going to follow my rules.
What kind of rules is she bending or breaking that he is enforcing?
She started lying about where she was, being not coming home on time.
Okay.
Kind of things like that. And he spends a lot of money on his kids. He's very active in their life because they play hockey, and hockey is expensive.
But what kind of rules is she? So she's coming in late. She's breaking curfew. And how old is she again?
She's a senior in high school.
Okay. So she's probably 17, if I had to guess?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the dilemma is, he says we have certain rules in our home, and they're reasonable rules, like you can't be out after a certain hour. She's saying, by her actions at least, I don't care what the rules are. I'm going to do what I want to do. So is the question now, does he send her back to her mother, or does he try to fix the situation somehow?
He did. And they live in the same community, but now
our
family is just heartbroken because he doesn't have a relationship with her. It's her senior year, and he should be in her life.
Absolutely. So who is the, I don't know, who's the stubborn one here? I mean, he has a right to make those rules, and she has an obligation to follow them. Honor your father and mother. But is she the more stubborn of the two, or is he the more stubborn of the two?
Well, it's probably him. Mm-hmm. Because he feels like he said, you can't live here if you won't follow the rules. So I said, but Bill, you can't not have a relationship with her. She needs her father in her life. He said, I can't go back on what I said.
That is true. There is a certain, you know, because then that would diminish his authority if she breaks the rules and he just lets her get away with it.
Right. Yeah. Is there any, he said somebody else is going to have to do it, he said, because I can't go back on what I've said. And I respect that. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how to move forward to reconcile this, or can't you?
Well, not everything can be fixed. And sometimes, you know, when you're a ute, like she is, you don't see things as clearly as you do later. And her sort of breaking the rules with impunity is not atypical for teenagers. They tend to do that, some more than others. I think I broke a rule or two when I was a senior in high school.
If you disobey the rules, you get cut off.
Yeah. And I learned that lesson the hard way. More than once. Well, I do respect, as you put it, I do respect his sticking with his principles. He's the dad. She's not. It's his house. She has a duty toward him as her father, even though she's not recognizing that duty, to be obedient to him. So I don't fault him for doing what he did. It's hard to say what you can tell her that will get her attention because she's probably miffed by the whole thing. And her is her mother egging her on in some way or another?
Oh, I would assume so. That's kind of been the pattern.
Yeah. So sometimes these situations, there is no fix. Sometimes you just have to grin and bear it and wait till somebody grows up a little bit. Now, if there's room for the dad to extend an olive branch like, hey, you know, can we get lunch? I haven't seen you in a while. Can I take you out to dinner? Can I take you out to lunch? Can we go get breakfast this Saturday morning? I mean, there are ways that he could work on repairing this without giving in and letting her, you know. And so maybe that's a way
that's
to do it,
advice.
You know, do an end run around the problem where he's reaching out, he's giving her some love and attention, but he's also not doing it in a way that's going to change his rules. I think he's right to have those rules and to enforce them. And what's worse is that if he gives in, then, and I think he realizes this already, I'm assuming, if he were to give in and compromise, then she would realize, okay, what other rules can I break? Because dad's going to, he's going to cave. We don't want that.
Right.
So they can have some Very reconciliation. Good. They can have, you know, they can actually, if he plays his cards right, they can actually probably find a way through this where they get, yeah, like that. They can have a reunion of sorts, father and daughter. She wouldn't even know this song.
Yeah, you would. He's old enough.
No, she's only a junior or senior in high school.
Right.
This is like ancient music to them. What do you think about that idea, Tricia?
I think it's excellent, and I will make sure he hears the podcast.
Yeah, I think
Thank
he's
you
right.
So much.
You're welcome. So I'll just recap. I think he's right to have the rule in place and to enforce it. Maybe seek a creative way to get her back in his life and get him back in her life. I mean, what teenager would turn down a free meal, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. Well, that's my thought. Well, I hope it has a happy ending. I have a feeling it probably will.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you. Let's go to, where are we going now? Let's go to Texas, Lockhart, Texas, to be exact, and talk to Alondra. Alondra, they tell me you're 12 years old. Is that true?
Yes.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
What would you like to talk about?
All right, so I have a question.
All right.
If we have one God and there's more than 1 billion people in the world, how can that one God be with all of us at the same time?
Ah, very good question. And how many people are there now? I suppose it's probably getting close to about 5 billion people or thereabouts. That's a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did you know that a billion... Well, let me put it this way. Let's think about what a billion is. So if you had, could you imagine if you had $1,000 bill, like a bill, like money that would be $1,000? Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you would have to have $1,000 bills to make a million. Okay. Follow me. So imagine if you had a $1 million bill and you go into the grocery store to buy a box of cereal. Can you break a million? They probably couldn't break a million.
No.
You would need 1,000 million dollar bills to equal a billion. Amazing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're saying, why is he telling me this? Well, just to get a sense of how many people there are on planet Earth right now, probably about 5 billion or thereabouts. This is planet Earth, as Duran Duran would say. So how does God love all those people? How is he present to all those people? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Well, we don't know exactly because you and I haven't been to heaven yet, so we haven't seen God the way we will when we get to heaven. But we do know a few things. And one thing is that for us, it would be impossible because we're in time and space. So we're limited. Like you are wherever you happen to be right now, probably in your home, you can't be there and in Paris, France at the same time because you're limited in time and space. You have to be in the place you are. Okay. God is not like that. God is outside of time and space. And we don't really understand what that means, but we know it's true. So he's not limited the way you and I are because he doesn't have a body. He's not in a place. So that means that God can be present everywhere, all at the same time. And he's present in your life. He's present in my life. He's present in the lives of the people in China and in any other part of the world. He's present there because he's outside of time and space. Now, I realize that this it's hard to understand because we don't have anything like that in this life that we can point to. But that's really the answer to the question. What do you think about that?
I think it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Here's another way to think about it. So, do you have any brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have two.
Are you the oldest?
No, I'm the middle child.
Okay. Fair enough. So when your mom and dad go out to dinner, let's say, or they go on a trip or they do something where they leave you guys at home with a babysitter, you know what that's like, right? Where your mom and dad aren't there?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's kind of like this also, where even though your mom and dad aren't there in the house with you, they're still kind of there because their authority and the rules that they give you guys, like you have to be in bed by a certain time, or you have to do the dishes after dinner, or you have to take out the trash, or you're not allowed to do this, you know, the kind of rules that every family has. In a way, your parents are still there because of their authority being present in your home, meaning that they're still affecting you. They're still present in a certain kind of sense because you know that mom and dad want us to do these things and mom and dad don't want us to do these things. So their influence is still present in the home even when they're not physically there. That's another way to think about it. It's hard to imagine this, isn't it?
Yeah, I was checking in because you were cutting out.
Okay. All right. Well, does that help a little bit?
Yeah, it helps a lot.
Good. Hey, ask your mom if it's okay if she gets you this book. I'm going to give you a book recommendation that I think you'll find interesting.
Okay.
Okay. So if you have something to write it down with, the book is called Theology for Beginners.
Biology for Beginners?
Not biology, theology. So T-H-E, theology.
Okay.
For Beginners by Frank Sheed, S-H-E-E-D.
Okay.
And if your mom says it's okay, I really think that book will help you because it will help you think about some of these really big issues like the question that you just raised. I think you'll find it interesting. All right?
Yeah.
Good talking to you, Alondra. Yeah, thank you. Tell your mom thank you for letting you call me. This is Planet Earth, and I will be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a new free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com/Madrid.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
To boldly go where no man has gone before.
This is pre-Star Wars, Cyrus. I like it. I like the retro.
Retro.
Okay, so here's what's going on. And thank you for the music. This is good music for the story. We talked about this a week or two ago. William Shatner, 90 years old. Captain Kirk on Star Trek. What did he used to say to Spock? Use the Force, Mr. Spock. Didn't he?
I'm not. I'm not commenting on any.
I love giving you headaches like that. Live long and prosper, Harry. All right.
Body blow. Body blow.
Uhuru. I like that name. Uhuru. Whatever her name was.
You proceed from a false assumption.
Send out a hailing signal. Mr. Sulu, you have the con. I'm just remembering all the
lines.
Don't
you
from
have
the show.
A story to share?
I do. It's fun. It's a digression. It's a cul-de-sac. So he's going into space next week. That's it. That's the whole thing. So Jeff Bezos, Blue Origin Company, announced that he's going into space. And he said in a tweet, yeah, it's true. I'm going to be a rocket man. He added, it's never too late to experience new things. And I think that's really neat for 90 years of age. I don't know that I would go into space anytime soon. But why not? If you're 90, I mean, what else is there left to do before you go up into space? So that's actually happening. And he'll be the oldest person in space when this happens. He'll be joining three other people. Two of them are paying customers. And they'll be on the Blue Origin capsule. It will last 10 minutes in flight. They'll get about 66 miles up into the sky. Who cares about how many kilometers? Nowadays, they seem to put everything more and more in kilometers and meters. Forget that. 66 miles. And it will parachute back to the desert floor in the capsule. One hopes that those parachutes work. And so that's happening. And he will actually have that being in space on his resume now. So it won't be merely the fictional portrayal of Captain Kirk.
Fictional? What?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I don't know if you mentioned or not, but Scotty was blasted into space after he had died.
Oh, tell me about that.
Oh, that's Scotty was blasted into space after he died. So he was cremated. And they put him on one of the rockets. I think they did the same thing with Gene Roddenberry, but I'm not 100% sure. But I know the actor who played Scotty, his ashes are in space. I used to know it. I should know it.
I bet I could find out. But anyway, so he's in space. Is he like heading to
who?
Deep space or Montgomery? Is that his name, Montgomery Scott?
Yes, that's it.
Is that his name?
That's it, Montgomery.
Right. So he's moving heavenward. He's trying to get to heaven the old-fashioned way.
I'm giving her all she's got, Captain. If I push it any harder, the whole thing will blow.
Sounds like this show. Hey, real quick, I want to share something with you. I did share this with you yesterday, but I want to return to this. My lovely daughter, one of my lovely daughters, she sent a video of two of my grandsons. These are her boys. And it's the funniest thing. I'm not going to post it on Facebook or Twitter, rather, just for the sake of her privacy. But she plays the Hanson song called Mbop, which I'm sure you've heard. Yeah. That song. Now, say what you will about this song. It is, you know, bubblegum rock, but it is maddeningly catchy. You have to admit that, Cyrus.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do. You admitted it before the show.
Don't know what you're talking about.
So here's what happened. So my lovely daughter posted a video of, you know, she's sitting in the living room and her two little boys are just, you know, on the couch. And they're little guys. So the older of the two is 4 going on 5 and the younger of the two is 2 going on 3. Something like that. And she just starts playing this song. And the older grandson, he's just sort of like, he looks up, he lifts his head up off the couch, he looks up with a quizzical look on his face, and he just gets off the couch, and the other grandson gets off the couch, and they start cleaning up. They start cleaning up their toys and putting it into a basket because she has them trained that that is the cleanup song.
That's genius. I love it.
And she got it from my wife. Actually, no, it wasn't my wife. Who was it? It might have been my oldest son, John, our oldest child. And as I recall, at some point along the way, he would like supervise the other kids to clean up, like if the room was filled with toys or something. So he would put that song on, and that was the cleanup song. So it was, you know, to make it fun, and everybody would kind of race to see how quickly they could get everything cleaned up before the song was over. And so my daughter has incorporated that into the lives of her children. And it's just the funniest thing because it's just very matter of fact. He hears the song. It's like Pavlov's dogs. which would be a great band name.
He just pops up and starts cleaning.
Yeah.
A little,
well, you saw it.
A little kid.
Yeah, and he doesn't even question it. It's like, oh, it's the cleanup song. So he gets up, he gets off the couch, play the song so you can get the mood music here. So he just hears this music, and he starts cleaning. And his brother falls into tow, and he starts cleaning up too. And that's the cleanup song.
I'm going to get these kids over to my house and play this song.
Or play it for your kids.
I don't think
tell your
work.
Kids this is the mowing the lawn song. This is the raking the leaves song. It's Pavlovian.
Yeah, my kids are too old now. Can't teach old kids new tricks.
I have a great idea.
All right, I'm listening.
Okay, just don't tell anybody, okay? Start playing this whenever you want Melanie to make you like lasagna or tacos or something. Just play the song. This is the making lasagna song, honey. Next thing you know, she's in the kitchen making lasagna.
Pour me a glass of wine, honey.
Yeah, this is the pour me a glass of wine song, please.
I think I'd pick a song a little less irritating.
Okay. All right, that's it. And for all you parents out there, give this a try. It actually does work. And just tell your kids this is the cleanup song.
That is so funny. Pavlov's dogs.
It is funny.
Yeah. It works on me when my wife wants another drink. She just, you know, clinks the ice in her glass.
And you rise obediently from the couch.
Very obediently, yes.
Like Lurch.
Yes.
You rang. All right. Fair enough. Well, I'm just putting that out there as a public service announcement for all the parents, especially you younger parents. If you want to get the kids in gear, it actually is very funny to see it happen. And I remember when my kids were little and that song came on, they all knew what it meant. And, you know, kudos to my son for coming up with this idea. But the tradition lives on. With my grandchildren.
That's
anyway,
so much cooler. We have a cleanup song. Like, everybody clean up, do your share, something like that. We haven't done it in years, but this is way better. This is way better than that.
I got spanked when I was a kid. And I, you know, no shame. You know, my mother and father were never, you know, they never went overboard. But when my dad would take his belt off, that was way more powerful than any song. He would just take his belt off. That was like, okay, I'm going. I'm doing. Whatever it is you need done, I'm doing it now. Because that was the sign. That was the sign that said, this is your last warning.
Yep. Get the cleaning.
Yeah. Or whatever it was you need me to do. Yeah.
Would they call you by your first and middle name when you're in trouble?
My parents always called me Pat. Everybody called me Pat when I was growing up. Mm. Patrick is more what everyone calls me.
But when
now.
You're in trouble, they use your full name.
My dad never did. But my mom, yeah, when I was, as moms do, when I was in trouble, she would say Patrick, and I knew there was something more involved. But nobody ever really called me Patrick when I was growing up. It was always Pat. In fact, it would have been odd for them to call me Patrick. It would have seemed, but now it's odd when people call me Pat. It's weird how that changes. So as an adult, Patrick became the name, and then that sort of stuck. So that's what I'm used to. Anyway, let's get back to the show, and no more umbop. Let's go to Jacob in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Hello, Jacob.
Hey, Patrick. How you guys doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Awesome. I enjoy the show so much, and I wanted to say that I won't take too much of your time. I'm up early this morning dealing with some dogs, but I got a break, so...
That's okay. I was wasting time talking about Hanson and umbop, so feel free.
Yeah, I mean, you can talk more about Duran Duran. I'm hungry like the wolf, so I want you to your time. So while you guys are busy this morning, so
fair enough.
But just one quick question, and if I have time for another one, I'll ask it. But I was recently listening to you, and I heard about the nativity scenes, and I was thinking about getting one for my grandma. She's 87 years old now, and little backstory here, just to kind of show this is the reason why I'm a former cop, and I believe through the VA and through self reflection, and my parents and my mom, that I might be a little bit on the Asperger spectrum. So, in essence, I'm socially a little bit below some others, but I have differences. I'm not sure what it is, but I'm very aware of a lot of things that other people aren't aware of, right?
Okay.
I'm very aware of, I notice a lot of things that other people don't notice, right?
Okay.
So I was thinking about your nativity scene on the radio you were talking about, and then thinking about how I grew up in a family of of vices. I'm in Wisconsin. Alcohol consumption is a big thing here.
Okay.
I can think back to my childhood and think, you know, I can't think of any memory that doesn't involve cigarettes or alcohol, which is one of those kind of childhoods, you know. Okay. And now, as an adult, you know, if this world that we live in now with the COVID and everything else isn't hard enough, I just hate seeing my relatives. You know, I grew up in a kind of religious family on the Lutheran side, but just relatives that I have now, with these vices, smoking and drinking, that, you know they want to quit. Just, you see it in them, right? But they just can't get over the hump. And
so, so who is, let me interject if I may, Jacob. So you're concerned about your parents or extended family drinking and smoking, or is it something in you that you're concerned about, or both?
No, not in me. It's just that I have been one to never really, I grew up with that, so I've always shied away from, I've never had a problem with any kind of vices like that, because I've really pushed against it, you know, even though that's kind of in my background as far as the way I grew up. But my aunt and my mother now, long story short, my mother started smoking recently, and she's never smoked, and my aunt smokes, and my aunt stays with my grandma because she's helping her out at 87, and I've seen that.
Yeah.
The smoking, even though it's like she's on the porch, it's a smaller residence, and the smoke walking into the house affecting my grandma because my grandma really didn't like the smell of, you know.
Are you wondering how you can encourage your mom to stop smoking?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just it's there's been a lot of stress. I mean, this is why I know this is where this is coming from. It's coming from stress. That's where these vices are coming from. I mean, I came back to Wisconsin only a few months ago. I was working down in New Mexico, and my mom is remarried, and my stepdad
has
been abusive.
Let me just interject, just because the time is going to get away from us, and we'll have a break coming up. So how would you summarize the question you're asking me so I can make sure I answer it?
Yeah, so I'm going on different tangents here, but what could I do to maybe help, in your opinion, promote some smoking cessation among them? They're older than me, and you know, I made my grandma laugh. I said if I ordered the nativity scene and put it on the porch for my aunt smokes, and maybe she's not really religious, if I put that out
I have some ideas for you. I've got some ideas. So if you have a pen handy, write this down, Jacob. I am familiar with some of these commercials that are put out by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So if you go to cdc.gov and type in former smokers, okay, put that in the search bar, former smokers. They've got a ton of videos, and I'm looking at a few of them here, that are people who describe, you know, as former smokers, the devastating effects it has on their health and on their family and on their social relationships. And they're really good. They're very effective. And they're especially so because there are people who have been there. So you see like this one video here, it's actually a series of videos. Becky is her name, and she's on an oxygen feed thing, you know, the thing that goes in your nose. She needs oxygen now continuously because she has COPD because she smoked for many years. A guy named Bill, he has diabetes and he used to smoke. The smoking made his diabetes worse. Eventually, by the age of 40, it involved kidney failure, blindness in one eye, leg amputated due to poor circulation. And he says that he encourages smokers to make a list of everything they're willing to give up if they want to continue to smoke. And he died of heart disease at the age of 42. So these are just every man, every woman's stories, and they're very effective. And I would have a feeling that, I mean, talk about being scared straight, Jacob, that if your mom were to watch some of these videos, it would probably get her attention in a big way. You ought to try that.
It's just scary, all the human, you know, the vices that us humans fall into. And I remember just, you know, I'm 40 years old now, but when I was in my 20s and 30s, my father grew up the whole time. I grew up with him smoking the whole time I was a kid, and I coughed up yellow stuff for years.
Yeah, that's gross. And I hate that you have to go through that. I remember when I was a kid, for what it's worth, Jacob, that my dad used to smoke. And this is before the smoking, you know, anti-smoking mentality really took hold here in the United States. And I remember being a kid in the station wagon with all the windows rolled up and my dad smoking. So we were all smoking at that time because my dad was smoking. The window would be open just a little crack So if he had to put the ash out the window, and that was about it. The rest of the time we were in that car with the smoke, and none of us really knew any better. But once that information began to get out into the mainstream, and my dad realized just how negative these effects are on one's health, he stopped smoking. And he's just about 84 years old now, thank God. So your mom can quit, and I have a feeling these videos will help her. And you know what we'll do just to make it easier for everybody? We're going to post a link to these videos from the CDC on the show Twitter feed. Cyrus will get those posted, and you'll be able to watch them at your leisure. There are a bunch of them, and they're interesting, and they're scary for that matter. So check it out. Thank you, Jacob. I appreciate it. We'll go to Tony now in Albuquerque. Hi, Tony.
Hello?
Yeah, hi. Welcome.
Hi, how you doing? My question has to do with the traditional mass and the Novus Ordo mass, and why the difference is in the weeks after Pentecost.
Well, that's because of the liturgical calendar that's followed in the traditional Latin mass way, custom, is different from the new rite of the mass. So when the new rite of the mass was promulgated at the Second Vatican Council, the liturgical calendar was modified. So that's the difference. If you look at the two, they're not the same from one day to the next.
Understand. Yeah, because we're in week 19 on the traditional mass, and I think it's like 25 on the Novus Ordo. Yeah, so what was the change?
Well, I don't have the precise details at my fingertips, but when the calendar was changed, different feast days were added and some feast days were removed from the traditional calendar and some feast days added that are not on the traditional calendar. So as an example, I haven't checked this, but I'm just guessing it's true, but I don't believe that the Feast of Divine Mercy is found on the traditional calendar. It was never on the traditional calendar. So that would be one example. So things got moved around, and that's really the bigger picture answer to the question.
Oh, okay. I understand now. Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're most welcome. And for anyone who's interested, I've mentioned this a time or two on the air. I have an app that I really enjoy. It's called IPIETA. So the letter I, then P-I-E-T-A. I have no connection to this app. I don't make any money from it. I'm just mentioning it to you. It's a really cool app that's chock full of just a really huge, vast amount of Catholic things. So the Summa Theologiae from St. Thomas Aquinas, a vast amount of the writings of the Church Fathers, the entire Bible, all the recent papal encyclicals going back maybe 200 years, all the catechisms, the Baltimore Catechism, you name it, it's in here. It's astonishing how much is here. And they've got the calendar of the readings for each day of the year. And you can toggle between the Novus Ordo, which is the new rite of the Mass, and the traditional rite of the Mass. So if you want to see the difference in the calendars, you can just toggle from. So like, for example, today is the 27th Tuesday in Ordinary Time. And on the traditional Latin Mass calendar, it's Saints Placid and Sosius, I think is the name, and the readings are different, and they reckon this one as 2 days after the 19th Sunday after Pentecost. So for those of you who are interested in the distinction between the calendars, you can find it on that app, IPIETA. Let's take a break, and we'll come right back with more of your phone calls. The number to dial is 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
Tacos are the best food that I've tried.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
When the meat is ground and the beans refried.
At the intersection of faith and culture.
In a soft or crunchy shell.
Get connected to the conversation.
I think both is well. It's my favorite food.
888-914-9149.
They taste so good.
Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Oh, boy, it's Taco Tuesday. You're the best day of
all right,
the
all right,
week.
All right, all right,
as soon
all right.
As I can get some tacos.
Yeah. Okay. Andale.
Happy Taco Tuesday, Patrick.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, by the way, we have for all of you a chance to win a free outdoor nativity set. These things are really neat. Valued at $500, by the way. And we're going to give away 200 of them for free, absolutely free, meaning that when you sign up by going to relevantradio.com/nativity and you put in your name and whatever the info is that you need to put in there, it's basic, you'll be registered to be in this drawing. And when, if you win the drawing, then you will be one of the lucky 200 people who will get one of these nativity sets valued at $500. Did I mention it was valued at $500? That's what you would pay if you were to buy one of these. And it's a great way to evangelize your friends. Put it out front, and hey, when the Amazon truck rolls by or people walking in your neighborhood see that, they're going to be evangelized. So act now, because it's all said and done by midnight on, let's see, I think it's the 15th of the month, Central Time. And if you haven't registered by then it's too late because the doors close. And 200 people are going to get them, and it won't be you if you don't sign up. So sign up, and you have a good chance to do that. I can't sign up for it. Cyrus can't sign up for it. These are all for you, all for our listeners. So no insider trading going on here. I want to share something with you briefly before we return to the phones. You hear me talk about St. Thomas Aquinas fairly frequently on the program. He's just a towering intellectual giant when it comes to philosophy and theology. And a lot of people nowadays, I mean, you've heard the name, you've heard St. Thomas Aquinas. You may not know all that much about him. You may have heard the title of one of his more famous works called the Summa Theologiae. It's not the Summa Theologica. I don't know why people say that. It's the Summa Theologiae. But in any case, he wrote that and many other works on philosophy and theology, primarily theology, but he could carry himself in both worlds. And I think nowadays many people, they don't realize just what an important and authoritative figure he is. First of all, he's a doctor of the church, and that is a special title that is reserved in particular for those men and women who have done great things by way of teaching the faith to others, and he certainly qualifies for that. So here is a description of how St. Thomas Aquinas and his work was regarded at the Council of Trent. I thought you might find this interesting. So this is from an excerpt from an article that appeared in the Catholic Biblical Quarterly, maybe 70, 80 years ago. It says, the Summa Theologica, and they spell it that way, occupied a unique place at the Council of Trent. In his encyclical, Aeterni Patris, published on August the 4th, 1879, Pope Leo XIII says that St. Thomas Aquinas may be said to have been present at all the ecumenical councils of the Church after his time, presiding, as it were, by his invisible presence and his living teachings over their deliberations and decrees. But that the greatest and most special honor of all was given to the angelic doctor, that's St. Thomas Aquinas, the most special honor was given to him at the Council of Trent, when during its sessions, together with the Bible and the formal decrees of the sovereign pontiffs, the fathers of the Council of Trent had the open Summa Theologiae placed upon the altar, so that thence they might draw counsels, arguments, and oracles. This, says the Pope, was a singular honor and praise accorded to St. Thomas, which was not given to any of the fathers or other doctors of the Church. So just imagine that scene. Now, he wasn't there, obviously. He was long gone. But at the Council of Trent, if you can picture the assembled bishops in this cathedral church in Trent in Italy, and there on the high altar was opened a copy of the Holy Bible, and next to it, a copy of the Summa Theologiae by St. Thomas Aquinas. That's a pretty good endorsement for an author's work. That will never happen with any of my books, nor should it. But it was right and just that it should happen in the case of St. Thomas. So even if you just get a little bit of St. Thomas under your belt, it's well worth the time to study him. And thankfully, in English, his works are widely available online. So if you just type in St. Thomas Aquinas or Aquinas Summa Theologiae, here they have Theologica. You can put it that way as well. And you'll find it in a little bit of reading. It wouldn't be easy at first if you're not used to the way that he is writing, but it will pay great dividends in terms of understanding the faith even more clearly. Let's go to Marie now in New Jersey. Good morning, Marie.
Good morning, Patrick. I have a question about divorce.
Okay.
At church last Sunday, the priest said that in the old days, the church taught that people who were divorced were excommunicated, and that now the church teaching has changed. So here's my question. First of all, the church doesn't change its teachings. Secondly, I don't believe they ever taught that you were excommunicated for being divorced. They taught that it was a grave sin to be divorced and remarried. Maybe they said excommunicated, but not to just be divorced. Am I correct?
Yes, generally speaking, you are. So this is a law. This is not a teaching, if that's what you mean by what you said. So it's part of the church's canon law, and it touches upon doctrine, such as the doctrine of the nature of the sacrament of holy matrimony. But the church's law is not a teaching, which I think is the point you're making, right?
Well, yes. Also, I don't believe that the church's law ever said you were excommunicated from being divorced.
I'm getting to that. I just wanted to sort out the first part of your question.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Yes. Okay,
yeah.
I'm with you.
Okay. Yeah. So the second part is, I believe you're correct on that as well, that you did not incur excommunication by getting divorced. Now, I will have to reserve final judgment for the canon lawyers among us. I am not a canon lawyer, and I am more than happy to be corrected if I'm mistaken on this notion, but I'm not aware that there was a provision in the law for excommunication. Now, it's possible that, a couple things I should say. We live in an era now of what's known as no-fault divorce, in which there is no reason given nor any reason needed to get a divorce. You can divorce for any reason or no reason whatsoever. But it used to be in the civil laws that there was fault assigned. And when a divorce case was judged in court, the person who was getting the divorce usually was doing so because the other party had done something that the law recognized as, you know, a problem that they would rule in favor of the divorce. But since there's no fault anymore, we never really hear much about that. So one possibility here is that if the spouse who divorced his wife because he wanted to marry another woman, even if he didn't marry her, if he abandoned his wife, for example, and abandoned his children, there may have been a provision in the former code of canon law that might have had that penalty. I just don't know offhand. But I think generally speaking, I don't think that there was a penalty of excommunication. So I'd have to do a bit of homework on that, but I can, and I can report back to you.
Okay, because I remember at the time, I'm a little older than you, not too much though, that Jackie Kennedy was said to have been excommunicated, but it wasn't because she was divorced, it was because she was marrying Onassis, who was divorced.
Right.
That's
exactly.
What,
she was a widow, so she had the freedom to remarry if she
right,
chose
she
to.
Right, she was fine, and right. So she was not excommunicated. But you see, this is the false teaching that some people spread around. The reason I'm questioning is because I have a friend who wanted to be a Eucharistic minister, and she wouldn't because there were ladies in the church who told her she was in sin because she divorced. She never remarried. Do you see what I'm saying? So I mm-hmm. guess I was just really upset when I heard this priest pronounce this at Mass, you know, on Respect Life Sunday, of course. You know, we didn't talk about life. We talked about people getting excommunicated. So anyway, so I just wanted to straighten that out because I want to object to it. But I don't want to object to it if my memory is wrong or if I'm incorrect.
Do this. I would recommend that you go to a canon law website called Canon Law Made Easy, and you can do a search for that question and come up with an answer, because this is the blog of a canon lawyer who can answer those questions. Now, keep in mind that the Catechism of the Catholic Church does indeed say that divorce is a serious sin, but it would depend upon the circumstances of the divorce. And there are plenty of serious sins that one can commit that don't incur the penalty of excommunication. That's another thing to consider, which you seem to already know.
Okay, canon law made easy.
Right. I think you'll find it very interesting. I read it fairly frequently. Well, thank you, Marie. I appreciate it. Let's go to Rod now in Eureka, California. Good morning, Rod.
Good morning. In Matthew chapter 18, Jesus set up how to handle sin in the church. You know, go to that person, and if that doesn't work, then take a witness, and if that doesn't work, then go to the church. If that doesn't work, then, you know, kind of just communicate yourself with them. And I'm just wondering, how come the church doesn't do that to this day, you know, through grave sins like homosexuality, which is an abomination to God, those that believe in abortion. I'm just wondering how come the church doesn't crack down on that more, since this, you know, since it's the church of Jesus' church.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's notice, number one, that in Matthew 18, beginning of verse 15, Jesus is addressing this teaching to us as individuals as the starting point in any case. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, that every word may be confirmed by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. So you see how it escalates from the individual one-on-one talking to the person all the way up to essentially excommunication by the church. So your question, I guess, can only be answered in those individual instances. So if you see a situation where you might be able to remonstrate with your brother, that's where you're supposed to start. If that doesn't work, you follow the pattern. Now, it doesn't mean necessarily that because you've got something, you know, against him, or he's got something against you, that if you don't sort it out, that the church will excommunicate him. It doesn't mean that. But in the case of somebody who, let's say, a devoutly Catholic, quote-unquote, politician, who touts his or her Catholicity, but at the same time is doing the work of the devil by promoting abortion or other things that are contrary to the church's teaching, that's where the bishop is required, or at least that's his duty, to counsel that person and to, if necessary, excommunicate. It can get to that point. We never see that happen, but that's the idea. So your question to me is, why is that not happening? Well, you'd have to ask the bishops. You'd have to ask them why this is not happening, because ultimately that would be their province.
Right, because Jesus wants a bride that's undefiled. You know, and sin is like leaven. You know, it spreads. And so, if you have these people that that believe in abortion, you know, and you have somebody next to them that's pregnant, and you know, it just seems like they're activists, and they spread that poison, mm-hmm. and you know, pretty soon it spreads through the whole church.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm wondering how come it just doesn't get addressed more often. Is it because it's not a popular thing to do?
That may be part of it, but I think it's more likely a couple of other things. One is, let me just stipulate this first of all. I know bishops, and some of them I know personally, who do this, and they do it well. In other words, they take this mandate seriously. And I'm thinking, for example, about the Archbishop of San Francisco, Archbishop Corleone, who does a stalwart job of not only publicly exclaiming and teaching on these issues, but defending these principles and, when necessary, rebuking. That's part of the job of a bishop, a very unenviable job, if you ask me. So thankfully, in some cases, it is going on. But why are the others not doing it? Well, only God knows, and that bishop. So pray for them, and I guess that's all I can tell you. We'll have to leave it at that. But I'll be right back with hour two of our program right after this. Please stay right there. Thank you, Rod.